Glad to have everyone here this morning. We have some visitors with us, and we have some of our own that are not with us due to obviously traveling in the holidays. We are picking up with, again, our study in the book of Proverbs. We are doing a topical study of the book. We'll be focusing the next two lessons on sins of the tongue. But in the context of how we present that material, Proverbs will present it in a lot of different individual snippets. Like we said, a proverb is a short saying that has a meaning that we can readily relate to. Oftentimes, positive and negative contrast, or a comparison to some physical thing that we can easily relate to. But in the context of the tongue and how we use our tongue, we had a series of lessons recently by Brother Banning in which he made the point about effective techniques of using the tongue, how we communicate. And I'd like to try to tie together some of those points in the book of Proverbs with how it relates to those techniques. Because many times when we... If I tell my child to do something and they go and do it, they have been obedient, but they don't necessarily know why I chose to tell them to do the thing I did. Same situation applies in the workplace with an individual. You tell him to go, I want you to go do this, and I want you to do it this way. Well, sometimes, free thinkers, I got a half dozen different ways I can do it. But if they don't question the context of why you've told them to do it a certain way or understand the context, then sometimes best practice will not be applied. And I think using some of Brother Banning's material helps us put the use of the tongue in the context of best practices as we communicate with people outside the faith and with inside the church. So we'll try to do that and tie that together. There's a lot of material there to try to tie together. We won't be doing that in two lessons. We had an entire series of gospel meeting over it. Tim just did a quarter's worth study on the same topic in the back, and there was a lot of material to digest there. But from a framework standpoint, we'll be trying to use that. The tongue, as it's talked about in the book of Proverbs, addresses... the way the tongue, by drawing comparisons to things that we can relate to. The first one is Proverbs 12 and 18, where it is compared to a sword. There is one whose rash words are like sword thrusts. By the tongue of the wise brings healing, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. We've heard the expression, the pen is mightier than the sword. That was used by our founding fathers in the, conveying the idea of freedom and so on. The pen is mightier than the sword. Well, in this case, the tongue itself can be much more harsh and cut much deeper than any physical sword can ever cut. And that's the point that the writer here is making. When we talk about backbiting, we use the comparison, and we'll talk about this later, the idea of someone stabbing you in the back. That's the thrusting of a dagger from behind. Oftentimes when the tongue is used that way. In the next passage, Proverbs 13, 2 through 3, it talks about the tongue itself requires guarding. When we guard something, what do we put around it? Oftentimes. A fence, a barrier, a wall, if we're trying to keep something in or keep something out. Well, if we're trying to keep our tongue in and keep it from getting loose, we've got to guard our tongue in the same way we would put a physical fence around something. We have to consciously, ooh, that's a trigger. I need to stop before I cross that boundary with my tongue. Sometimes it's going so far as to having to have the last word and just kind of stick that last dagger in there and twist it a little bit. That's the kind of an idea of, guarding against certain ideas related to that. The tongue itself is the converse of the speech is listening. So just as we talk about the tongue and we talk about the use of the tongue to convey a speech, it's just as important as it relates to the tongue to the idea of hearing and listening. It's emphasized just as emphatically throughout the Bible. Hear, listen, and heed. In Proverbs 13:1, a wise man hears his father's instruction. Let's compare it. We talked about wisdom earlier. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Here it's making the point a wise son hears his father's instruction. What's the difference between hearing something and actually listening to it? Okay, listening's a cognitive process. You're going to take it in. Okay, I heard that, but did I comprehend it? Did I process it and did I act on it? Maybe the tone that it was given will have something to do with that. So as I make the point here, it's hearing, listening, and heeding. You know, we talk about, and we'll talk about this as we go further, different ways that things are conveyed will be heeded in different ways. Acts 7:54. When they heard these things, they were enraged, and they ground their teeth at him. This is talking about after Stephen's speech. They heard it, and it infuriated them, and they ground their teeth at him to the point that they actually stoned him to death. Now, what message had Stephen conveyed to them? Christ crucified, the man that was crucified and raised on the third day is the one that you put to death. Well, in Acts 2:37, Peter delivered the same message on the day of Pentecost. And what was the response? Now, when they heard this, they were cut to the heart and said, Peter and the rest of the apostles, brothers, what shall we do? Same message, two totally different, polar opposite responses. Listening is just as important as the message. The same message was conveyed. It was conveyed in the same heartfelt intent for the audiences with their souls at heart, and yet they perceived it two totally different ways. So our audiences matter as well as we're working with the tongue. Correct. Now, in the second case, they heeded the message. In the first one, they totally different. They rejected it completely. And that is exactly right. You can hear it. You can listen to it. But you can how you behave and how you heed to it can be totally different reactions. How can the same message provoke opposite responses? It's the heart of the speaker is one aspect to that. So how the speaker presents it. In these two cases, the speakers, two different speakers, but they both convey the same message and with the same heartfelt soul intending message. But then it's also the heart of the hearer and how the heart of the hearer actually listens to it and heeds it and reacts to it. There will be cases when we speak to people, they will not heed it in the same way. Their hearts won't be willing to receive it in the same way. And sometimes that takes working with it and recognizing that individual and how they react to things to be able to find a better way to prick their heart. Crucial conversation short list. Now this is a snippet out of Brother Manning's material, and I want to try and what defines a crucial conversation? Well, the stakes are high, opinions vary, and emotions run high. We can think of that when we're talking to a family member about something that's not going well and they don't want to listen to us, that it can get heated in a hurry because emotion's going to run high. If we're talking to a brother that's in error, depending upon how that hearer is listening to it and whether they're willing to heed it could determine whether the emotions run high or not. There are handling options as it's related to crucial conversations. You know, we can choose to avoid them. We can stick our heads in the sand and avoid it like the proverbial ostrich. We can handle them badly, meaning we can go in and we can try and start a conversation and we can react to it badly ourselves or provoke somebody in the wrong way and it just go bad. How many have had a bad conversation? Okay, I think we can all honestly say we've had one of those. How many of us have avoided a conversation? We all have. It's painful. It takes getting up the courage to go and do it is about the hardest part of it. But the other handling option is that they can go well if we're prepared for them and we learn the techniques for doing so. Crucial conversations require a belief in the principle. You know, if we're going to have a conversation with somebody about Christianity, we had better be a believer in what we're presenting as the message. Belief that God can transform. So, first off, we've got to have a belief in the message, and also we've got to have a belief that, you know, God can change a heart. So, it's not up to us to change the heart, is it? What did it say? What is the, you know, who gives the increase? God does. We plant the seed, okay? Belief that change can occur. If you don't believe that change can occur, are you actually going to bother to do anything? It's like going up and doing something over and over the same way and expecting a different response. If we don't believe that we can change something, we're not going to actually put the effort into it. So that boils down to what we consider to be the fool's choice as well. We can speak up and it goes bad, or we keep quiet and let it happen. Neither one of those are really good options, are they? So, if we seek to foster dialogue so thoughts, opinions, and feelings can be shared to generate a better understanding of buy-in. That's the goal of a conversation, particularly one that's crucial. Dialogue is hindered by both silence and violence. Have you ever seen a bully get their way in a conversation? How do they typically do that? Don't let the other person speak. Okay? You know, yelling, berating. That's the violent side of it. Have you ever seen a person in a conversation just go shut down and go silent? My boss called me on this the other day. I was in the middle of a meeting and I kind of shut down, because I knew I couldn't affect anything beyond that point. These principles apply day to day. We have to start with our hearts and what we want for ourselves, the other person, and our relationship. And those are the key aspects when we talk about this crucial conversation shortlist. So what are common sins of the tongue, and how do they potentially relate to these very same principles? Well, one that we talk about is talking too much. And I hope you don't think I'm talking too much today, because I appreciate the comments. Putting your tongue into motion before you put your brain in gear is certainly a bad way to do too much talking. Passages that convey this idea. Proverbs 15:2. But the mouths of the fools pour out folly. Now, that particular passage doesn't say anything about talking too much. But when you just start pouring out water, can you put it back in the bucket? Can you put it back in the container? Is it hard to control it as to how fast it pours out? Takes a lot of skill, doesn't it? Well, a fool's mouth just runs all the time. It just pours and pours as fast as it can. And that's the point that's being made here, is pour out folly. Proverbs 15:28, the heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things. Okay, heart of the wicked, it just pours it out. And compares it here, makes the point of evil things. Proverbs 29:11, a fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. That goes to the point that Brother Holt made. You know, when you put your mouth in gear, but you hadn't put your brain in gear, you just give it. I'm going to step on the pedal and I'm going to just let it run when I give full vent to it. When you're mad, is it hard to control what you're going to say? Absolutely. When it's a heated conversation and you know that somebody's just stuck a dagger in your back, with their words. What's the first inclination? I'm going to stick it back to them. What's the reaction the Christian has to have? Hang on to it. Hold on to it. Hold it back. A wise man quietly holds it back. Yeah, backing up to one aspect of that, the wise man quietly holding it back, the fool will sit there and continue to push it, and they'll push it, and they'll push it. They'll push the conversation and try to continue to provoke. It takes exercise, it takes practice on our part to try to avoid that. Proverbs 18:6, a fool's lips walk into a fight and his mouth invites a beating. That fits to that very same idea, where a fool is provoking a conversation, trying to provoke a response. Here, a fool's lips walk into a fight. How many fights have started by somebody popping their mouth off? We see it in sports, do we not? We see it oftentimes in the football field when the players get to jawing against each other about a particular aspect. The emotions are high. It's heated. Adrenaline's rushing. They're going to pop off and say something. And this time, a few times this year, it's resulted in players being ejected because they've gotten into fights. Matthew 12:36-37. But I say to you that every idle word that men may speak, they shall give account of it in the day of judgment, for by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned. Jesus makes it clear in his message to all of us that our conversation and how we conduct our conversation is crucial to our salvation. We're going to give account for it. We're going to give account for the words that we just let spew out and run. We're going to give account for the words that we don't say. Often we talk too much. We fail to allow others to engage in the dialogue, and this goes against best practice. If we don't engage people and allow them to share their thoughts, how do we know what they're thinking? We don't. Only God can read their thoughts and intents of their hearts at that point if they haven't told us what the thought and intent of their heart is. We can only tell ourselves a story about what they're thinking. And that's secondhand at best. That's assuming things that are not in evidence. Would that hold up in court? No, it shouldn't. Common sense of the tongue. Whoops. That's interesting. The first part of that next slide should say whispering and talebearing. It looks like the animations are off. Sorry about that. Whispering and talebearing. Whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy in spirit keeps a thing covered. That's Proverbs 11:13, which is the passage before this. Whispering and talebearing. Whoever goes about slandering reveals secrets. A gossip is all intent on spreading what they know, whether it's common knowledge or whether it's hidden knowledge. A talebearer going about spreading news. How many in this room have been hurt by somebody spreading news that wasn't necessarily true? How many in this room have been hurt by someone spreading news that was sensitive that was true? Can go both ways, can't it? What's the root thing there, though? Not spreading it. That's the root thing of it, is not spreading it. Proverbs 16:28, a dishonest man spreads strife and a whisperer separates close friends. And that pops up the other way. A dishonest man spreads strife and a whisperer separates close friends. How many people have had friendships endangered by gossip? I think we could all raise our hands in here. Proverbs 17:9, whoever covers an offense seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates close friends. Same message as the previous verse. Proverbs 18 and 8. The words of a whisperer are like delicious morsels. They do go down into the inner parts of the body. If you have a good dinner, do you enjoy eating it? Story is a good story. Let's say it's a book and we're really engaged and interested in it. Will we sit down and read that whole thing? Or at least until we fall asleep? I know I've seen Stuart sit down and read a book from one end to the other if he's truly engaged. So getting engaged in something. Well, if we're really interested in the story that somebody's telling us about someone, we're going to eat that thing up, and we're going to listen to it, hook, line, and sinker. And guess what? That story's only told from the perspective of that person. It may not be true. It assumes facts are not in evidence. And we don't know it unless we have actually heard it from the mouth of the parties involved. So what's our obligation in a case like that? First off, stop. I don't need to listen to this. Secondly, if we have heard it, what do we have an obligation to do as Christians? Keep it to ourselves? If it's related to someone's soul and the condition of their soul and something needs to happen, we might have an obligation now that we know to go and talk to the true parties involved that it's being gossiped about. And that could go both from the standpoint of whether it's true or whether it's not true. Because they may need to know about it if it's not true to help squash it. And if it is true and their soul's in danger over it, we may need to encourage them. Proverbs 20, backtrack one thing. Let's say if we've heard just enough of that conversation to learn that there is an issue with potential issue. What does the Bible say about when you have a problem with a brother, what are you supposed to go do? That person that's tail-bearing to you has a responsibility to go talk to that brother before you do and get it straight. Proverbs 25 and 23, the north wind brings forth rain and a backbiting tongue angry looks. Nobody enjoys backbiting. Whispering and backbiting removes the safety that is required for dialogue. In order for us to communicate effectively, we have to be in a conversation and feel safe about it. We're not going to communicate if somebody's in our face yelling at us. We will shut down. Whispering and tail-bearing removes the trust that makes it possible for a safe communication. So without safety, conversations will revert to either silence or violence. Typo there. Next section here, as it's related to this, is lying. In Proverbs 6 and 17, there are six things the Lord hates, seven that are an abomination to Him: haughty eyes, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood. Lying falls in a category that is so distasteful to the Lord that it is an abomination. Falls in a whole host of other categories of things that are considered to be an abomination. You know, things that we do against our bodies, whether it be fornication or adultery or other acts that fall into that same category. In Proverbs 12 and 19, truthful lips endure forever, but a lying tongue is but for a moment. That one's hard for me to understand a little bit, and there may be another translation that sheds a bit better light on that. But if you think about it, you know, truth is something you trust and believe in. But a lie, you don't trust it at all. And it's just, it comes and goes. It has no strength with it. And oftentimes a lie will take another lie to cover up for it or another one to cover up for it and perpetuate itself to where it really is, it's a fleeting type thing. And what typically happens with an individual that's generally prone to the practice of lying about things. We often say they get tripped up in their own stories, because eventually you can't keep them all straight. Proverbs 12 and 22. Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are His delight. Same message as is given in the first 6 and 17. Revelations 22 and 15. Blessed are those who wash their robes so that... Now this is at the throne scene where it's talking about entering heaven. In the context of this passage. Blessed are those who wash their robes so that they may have the right to the tree of life and that they may enter the city by the gates. What kind of washing are they talking about here? What's the comparison to the washing of the robes as it relates to Christianity? We have our sins what? Washed away. Okay. Outside are the dogs and the sorcerers and the sexually immoral and murderers and idolaters and everyone that loves and practices what? Falsehood or lying. We don't enter heaven if we are commonly practicing lying. That's our way of life. Lying removes the trust, which is crucial to believing that dialogue can be effective. If you know that someone is prone to a liar, and they've told you, well, I'm going to change over and over again, are you going to likely go back to them and talk to them more? No. It fits in the category we've talked earlier about. Jesus made the admonition of what? Not throwing your pearl before the swine. Okay? What did we say was critical to an effective, crucial conversation? Belief in change. If a liar is not willing to change and tell the truth, we're not going to be willing to talk to him about it. The next passage here relates to the flattery. Sorry for the heading there. Proverbs 10 and 19, one who conceals hatred has lying lips. Okay, now that fits into the idea of lying, but when we are, you know, somebody's trying to, quote, butter us up, are they actually really telling the truth? They're not. They're casting things in a light to make us feel what? Typically better about ourselves. Okay? Now, this is not necessarily to say that we can't give somebody a compliment. You look nice today. Or I like the color of that outfit. Or your hair is, you know, to tell our spouse that their hair is beautiful or something. That's not necessarily flattery. Flattery relates to and ties to what our motive is. So, okay, let's say I'm in the doghouse with my wife and I start telling her that she looks nice today. What's my motive? Get out of the doghouse. Okay? That's flattery. I'm trying to get something out of it, as opposed to provide just a straight compliment. Flattery goes to the idea of how we want to persuade someone to do something, how we want to influence them, whether it be right or wrong. So we use flattery oftentimes to try to do that. It fits into the category of lying lips because our motive is not pure. We're looking for something for ourselves. Proverbs 27 and 6. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, profuse are the kisses of an enemy. Now this ties to the idea when someone tells us something and wounds us because really they're trying to win our soul. To help us to learn and to grow from it. Profuse are the kisses of an enemy. This relates to the idea of flattery. We have heard the storyline of someone is kissing up, trying to get something out of it. Their motive is to try and win something. How many have had a small child crawl in their lap and start giving you kisses because they want something? Okay. That fits into that idea because their motive. They want something. Well, the kisses of an enemy is that enemy wants something. And that's hard to live with in life sometimes, is to always have a certain level of suspicion about what somebody's motive is. But in the case of world leaders, and you watch world leaders who act consistently, they will have patterns at which they are behaving for their own interest. We look at world politics today and certain dictators. When they kiss up to somebody, it's because they want something. Oftentimes it's either a payback or some type of influence that they're trying to gain. Some motive that's not necessarily in the best interest of their own people. Proverbs 28:23. Whoever rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with his tongue. It's making the point by making a contrast. We've made this point over and over about Proverbs. It's comparing a favorable behavior to an unfavorable behavior. Flattery affects trust in the same way that a lying tongue does. It makes one question the motive behind the words and the nature of the heart sharing them. Part of a crucial conversation is trust that the other person has your best interest at heart. Flattery goes contrary to that principle. Angry words. And we may mention this earlier about angry words often trend themselves toward shutting people down, bullying things, and creating an area of violence. Proverbs 12:16, the vexation of a fool is known at once, but the prudent ignores an insult. Vexation of the fool is one that, yeah, he's in your face. He is wearing you down. He is, oh, I can't stand to be around him anymore. It could be someone in your face arguing with you. Proverbs 15:1, by contrast to that, passage makes the emphasis upon a soft answer turns away wrath. The grievous words or harsh words stir up anger. So if a conversation is being had between two people, what should the general tone be? It should be one of calm. It should be one of where you've set the premise in beforehand that you are concerned about each other, so that there's a level of mutual trust and respect to be able to carry on the conversation. That's best practice. When a conversation turns, or starts to turn, and that's part of the lesson material that Brother Banning emphasized, being able to recognize when it turns. Oftentimes you'll see a conversation turn from being calm to violent, or calm to silent. And then what do we do after that? Do we step back and try to re-engage? Do we try to bring that person back to a safe environment to where that conversation can continue? So, soft answer is a best practice to turning away wrath. Finding common ground and making the point that we're both here for our soul's purposes is why we're engaged in this conversation. Proverbs 15:18. A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. James 1:19. This you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Now we mentioned that the converse of speaking is listening. Hearing. And this passage is basically making the point you got to be listening and hearing. Part of that came out in Brother Banning's material is we've got to be hearing truly what the person's saying and not what we're telling ourselves they're saying. if I stand in that corner of the room and look this way, does it look the same as if I stand in that corner? They're different perspectives. I don't see the same picture. Do I need to gather more information to get a better picture? If I want to see, I'll pick on Albert, if I want to see the right side of Albert's face, I've got to go to that corner. If I want to see the left side of his face, I've got to go to that corner. With the two of them combined, I can see everything on his face except the back of his head. If we don't practice getting perspective and collecting enough information, we'll tell ourselves, well, he's got a right ear, even though I looked at him from the left. But he may not. Quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. Anger brings violence to the conversation that removes the safety needed to conduct dialogue. People shut down, the conversation ends. Bullies get their way using this approach. Authorities will use this approach, in some cases, to dictate their will by not allowing anybody else to voice an opinion. We see that in dictator states where only one opinion is allowed. Proverbs 12 and 18. Backbiting and sarcastic speech. Proverbs 12 and 18. There is one who has harsh words that are like a sword thrust, but the tongue of the wise brings healing. We mentioned this passage earlier. 5 and 37 of Matthew. Let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. We hear the passage about let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. Is that in contrast to sarcasm, where it can be perceived differently depending on how the hearer hears it? Be careful about sarcasm, because it relies upon how the hearer takes it as opposed to how it's delivered. If I tell you yes, is there any question about that? No. But if I tell you yes in a sarcastic way, which way are you going to take it? Depends how you heard it. Colossians 4 and 6. Let your speech always be gracious, seasoned with salt, so that you may know what you ought to answer each other. Let your best practice, and this is, I have a strong opinion on this. Best practice is to avoid sarcasm completely. Some people can pull it off, but some people cannot. Biting and sarcastic speech are an area where it's a sin of the tongue. Backbiting or biting speech brings violence to the conversation that removes the safety net needed for conducting dialogue, and sarcasm removes the trust in which you think you understand what the person truly means. Our last discussion point here today as it relates to profanity and filthy stories. Exodus 20 and 7, you'll not take the Lord's name in vain. You shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain, for the Lord will not hold him guiltless who takes his name in vain. Loose speech, characteristic speech that is using profanity, is not right in God's sight, particularly as it relates to profanely using God's name. Ephesians 5 and 4, but let there be no filthiness or foolish talk or crude joking which are out of place, but instead let there be thanksgiving. What are we to replace our speech with? Not filthy speech. We're to replace it with giving thanksgiving. James 3:9-11. With it we bless our Lord and Father, and with it we curse people who are made in the likeness of God. This is talking about our tongue. How can we issue blessings and cursings using the same mouth when we would curse the creation that God so put upon this earth and blessed. The last part of that passage, it says, from the same mouth come blessing and cursing. My brothers, these things ought not to be so. Does a spring pour forth the same opening from fresh and salt water? If you're going to curse somebody, you're either one or the other. You're behaving righteously or unrighteously. Just as well as a well can't issue both fresh water and salt water at the same time. Profanity is intended to bring violence by creating a shock effect in the conversation. We see comedians throw in profanity to try to hit the punchline. It's the shock effect of that. Profanity and filthy stories are a way that the tongue sins. Any comments on today's material? Wednesday night, we will pick up a second side of the tongue as it relates to this, but today, we've talked about sins of the tongue. Wednesday night, we'll talk about positive effects of the tongue, how the tongue can be used positively. Thank you.